Okay, so we're going to do now the set of methodology points on how to approach a signal. Okay, so I think I have two main broad areas that I want to discuss. The first one is here, is this question of like when you approach a sugya, what do you do, especially when you have a sugya nigamara, which is like fairly long. Okay, so if your whole sugya is a few lines, 5, 10 lines, whatever it is, so then, you know, even a little bit longer, but then, so certainly it makes sense. You read the whole thing and then you start trying to work it through and, you know, and give svaras. The issue is when you have sugyas that are kind of longer. Let's say a sugya gets an umlaut or a blot, you know, some of them are even longer than that. So like, what do you do in terms of, you know, do you read the whole thing? Basically get, understand the whole thing, read all the Rashis, read all the Tosafim. You know, start looking at other Rishonim, and then after you do that, you try to think, I guess, svaras. Or should you know, like, once you have like the initial question of the Gemara, like very often the Gemara will present an Ibaya or a Machlokas in the beginning, and then it'll have, you know, Tashmas or Mace Face and things like that. So do you, once you have like that first initial question or Machlokas, should you then start to try to give a svar, give a basic definition, right? So I say, first of all, I think there's a subjective element here. Is I think different people's minds work in different ways, you know. So, and that's because of different factors. Okay, so different factors. Let's see if I can. Okay, so for example, different factors. So one is like some people. Get overwhelmed by too many facts. If you give them too many facts and like you read the whole Gemara, then it's like it's overwhelming. They can't assimilate all. They can't assimilate it all, and then it just becomes too much, and they can't do anything. They're paralyzed, like an overwhelming number of facts, things like that. You know, so that's like one problem. But some people, on the other hand, it's like no, they want to see everything, and then somehow, like for me, for example, me. My inclination is much more towards trying to see like the whole area, and then kind of, in a sense, it's, I don't know how to describe it better, but like kind of like seeing whether my mind picks up on any idea or things like that. You know, for example, that's how I learn Chumash. I go through an area, I try to see all the Rashis, all the different things, and then I see if some insight comes to me. You know, but for example, it was interesting. I was discussing the right fate of this thing. We do have like different types of minds like this, and in Chumash also we're different, you know, like you'll like take your Rashi, analyze it, try to give it, so you know, I'm much more like to see like the broader overall bigger area and then see if something like that emerges from the whole. So there is a subjective element in not just Gemara learning, but I think just in terms of the way people's strengths and weaknesses, in terms of their mental powers, intellectual powers, it's like one thing that's very clear is that the intellectual abilities of people, it's like, it's very much not one, there's not one thing that means smart, but there's like different components to intellect. There's different abilities. And Gemara really brings out the different aspects. You have to make, you know, recourse to different strengths. But one of them is just like creative thinking or quick thinking, being able to quickly see some, you know, points. And the other one is being able to handle a lot of facts. The other is to juggle, you know, many facts. Aren't exactly the same thing. Be able to work with cheshbon, many different things. And then there's like a different thing of being able to assimilate many facts. Even if you don't say follow all the back and forth, you get overwhelmed. Okay. So there is a subjective element. And therefore, no matter what I say here, you have to be able to modify it for yourself. You know, even what if I make recommendations here, you have to realize that, these like general things that I think, but you know, you might be different. So you gotta be willing to be flexible. And also you're very often learning with somebody else with Harusta, and you have to find some sort of middle ground and accommodation between those two things, you know, or find a different Harusta, yeah. So one or the other. Okay. Okay. So, you know, we asked Rebbe this, I don't know how long it was. In like, it was like 5 years ago or something, 10, I don't know how long it was. It was in this room though, so at least 5 years ago, I would say. we asked him, like, what do you do? Like, what do you do in these circuits? How do you approach that? Okay. And again, I'm going to formulate the other side of the problem before I tell you what happened. One part of the problem is you get overwhelmed by the number of facts. If you just see too much and you can't think. The other part of the problem is that sometimes, you know, you're going to give a svara, but like very often, like the reason that Gemara goes to these tashmas and these mesveis and all these different things is because like it's bringing in important points and it helps you see, for example, very often a Gemara will give an initial question. It'd be better if I had particular examples. I just did one recently. I don't remember exactly. Okay, let's do this. There's a sugi of Hezek Shein Nika, Shmei Hezek or Nam. It's a sugi in Gittin, okay? So you start doing that sugi. So your initial intuition, and it's perfectly reasonable, is to define it in terms of is Hezek a mice of Hezek or whatever? You have to actually physically damage something, or is a Hezek something tashlum and compensation something? I don't remember exactly what your initial thing is, something along those lines, okay? But then the Gemara brings in one of its rayas, and I think it's the last one, a blot later, one of its rayas is by a gazlan. If you steal something, can you say Haresh Tuchal Fanach or not? Right? And in fact, you could steal Chamesh over the Pesach, you can give it back. And you say, therefore, you see Hezek Sheinikar, Lashme Hezek, because that's still considered, even though it's Asabana, the Chamesh, you can still return it. Okay, I don't get to the particulars, but the point is, and Tosa says, what's the raya? What's one thing to do with the other? One said the halach of Hezek, the other is the hashav of a gazlan, the two different sugyas. Tosa says, because the issue is it the same object or not? Do you say Hezek, Shein, and Iker, if it's not recognizable what the damage was, okay, do you say that that's considered a different object or not? Right? So you realize that by seeing ultimately the Gemara's final Tashma, which it ends up proving in, saying it to Yifta, I think, on the other sheet, though, I believe. So then you see that the question is more universal, right? So in essentially, when you want to sit down and think about that question, Hezek Shein Nikar Shmei Hezek or not, you have to be thinking this is a broader issue than just Nezek. This is an issue that should, whatever this far is for Nezek, should also include this far by Gzela, Bereish Shechal Fanecha, right? And I just, you know, came across another Gemara in Bava Kamma, that Gemara's in Gittin, about that ties it into a matbea shenifsal, which really screwed up a whole shiur I gave once upon a time, but years ago. Okay, the point is, by seeing new facts and new elements of the machlokas, you can realize, you know, if the question is broader or more narrow, or there's an aspect of the thing that everybody agrees upon, certain things like that come out. And when, if you sit there and spend a lot of time trying to define something, you could be wasting your time. You're wasting your time because you don't have all the facts. It's like, you know what I mean? It's like, what are you doing? You know, legitimately waste the time, what you're doing. It's because you're basically defining something that doesn't exist. You know, you have incomplete facts. And when you get more facts, you're going to have to junk the whole thing. So in that case, might as well, you know, the argument is to read everything first. This way, if there's any essential points, you'll see it first. And then when you sit down to think, you'll have already done that. As opposed to the argument the other way is, yeah, but I read everything, I get confused, it gets too much for me, and then I can't think. It's just overwhelming, you know? Okay. So we asked Rebbe this, what he thought. And basically what he said, what he does, is that what he'll do is, on the initial, basically when you get the initial question of the sugya, so he'll see, does he have an intuition in terms of what the machlokas is about? You know, if you have an intuition, Hezek Sheinik or Shmei Hezek or Lash Shmei Hezek, you say, oh, right, go again, just the fact. Hezek Sheinik means, let's say somebody's metame your truma. Okay, so it's like truma is not something that you can recognizably see. Okay, there's a Tosafot learns a little bit different. Again, I don't want to get into this, but simple pshat, you can't tell, you can't see that it's tummy or not. Okay, so do you say that's, that you, but you're damaging me. A truma that's tummy is worth a lot less than truma that's tahor. You can't really do very much with truma tummy, burn it, right? So do you have an intuition of what that machlokas is about? He's saying, like, if he has an intuition, then he'll try to define it right there, and then he'll move on. And so again, if things come off, and that's basically creating like a working svara. And a working definition has the advantage of, like, you can modify it as the sugya goes along. And also it'll help you organize the facts. like there are times where, and this is truer than just Gemara, like sometimes if you have to remember, you'll see, you know, it's like a memory trick. In a sense, like if you have to want to organize a material, sometimes you just want to have to come up with a svara, whether it's right or wrong. It's just like having some sort of svara allows your mind to organize the thing and place it into, you know, remember the steps of the Gemara or the different shitas. Like, you know, almost like if you have a machlokes, that's kind of like a multiple, each Rebbe Yehuda and the Chacham, and the Rebbe Yehuda is saying multiple things, and the Chacham are saying multiple things. Can you find some sort of way to, like, you know, unify them, some sort of like, you know, like, you know, like these charts or something like that, that people make these like charts of things like that. You kind of fit them in. This is what they're really arguing about. You know, like that's not essentially the machlokes. It helps you organize the material so your mind can grasp it. And then you can start thinking about it in a deeper way. So there's the advantage of having a working svara as you read through the material, having some way of making sense of it. You can assimilate the new material in a better way if you already have a working svara. Okay, so that's what he says when he has intuition. But if right away you basically don't have an intuition, let's say he's saying, you sit down, I don't really know. So he said he's not going to sit there and just think about it in the beginning of a sigla. You know, there are times where you have to sit and think, even though if you don't have an intuition or an idea, you have to sit and think and try to work something out, you know, ask questions or, you know, spend time on something. The Gemara doesn't just come right away, but you have to think. And again, that's another, you know, intellectual, you know, ability. Some people are faster thinkers than others. Some people are slower. Certainly if a person's a slower thinker, you have to sit and think. But basically he's saying that in the beginning of a sugya, when he's just starting out and you haven't really seen all the facts, he'll go until he gets an intuition. Once he gets an intuition, he'll try to bring out that intuition of what's the sense of this machlokas, and then he'll try to define it in the two ways. And if he doesn't have an intuition, then he'll read more until the point he develops the intuition. And once he develops some sort of intuition, then he'll try to give a svara. He'll try to define it. Okay, but if he doesn't, then you read the whole thing. Basically, the idea is what he keeps doing is getting more and more facts, more and more, you know, let's say Rashi's or Tosas, whatever it is, until the point where he has some insight. And once he has that insight, then he'll try to define it and bring it to a crux. Now, even when you define something, you have to be, and this is the problem of doing what Rebbe's doing. You have to, you know, it's still probably the best method, but it's just, the problem is that you have to be flexible. That when you get this working svara after the intuition, you have to be willing to modify it and change it and or reject it and replace it by a whole new approach as the facts dictate. The problem is very often a person gets stuck in the way of seeing the thing initially. It's like if you know, once you have your mind go down a certain path, because that's initially where your first intuition went, and your first intuition in general is wrong. That's the whole point. I mean, to some degree, this is a different point. Whenever you learn through a sugya, it never comes out the way you initially thought it was. It's like it's always different. That's the beauty of Gemara and Torah. You know, it comes out with and it's never the way you initially think, and it's always better. You know, that's the greatness of learning. So your initial intuition, it shouldn't really be. It's unlikely that your initial intuition is going to be your final svara. You want to be flexible in terms of developing it and redefining it and things like that. And you also want to be able to reject it entirely if you have to, should the facts dictate. But there is an emotional, I don't know if it's a purely emotional problem, that you get attached to your initial definition and you lose some of your flexibility in terms of your freedom and creativity and really seeing new approaches because you kind of get locked into a way of thinking about things. You know, and you kind of get locked into it too early in the game, and then you miss broader possibilities, deeper ideas, more creative approaches that simply just never jump at you because you've kind of already started going down a particular path. And it's very hard for people. It's not quite emotional. I don't think it's quite an emotional problem as much as just like the way your mind works. Like your mind in the beginning. That sense of you're befuddled, you're bewildered, you don't really know where to go. That's really the point where you have the most ability to go in all the different possible paths, all the different ways to approach a sugya. Once you start going down a path, it has the advantage that you're working on a path, but it has that disadvantage of it's like in a certain sense, you're the way you assimilate new facts is going to be constrained by the path you've already chosen. You know, there is this interplay, this dynamic between the working svara that you have and how you interpret the new facts. You know what I mean? Like, do you work them out? How do you work them out? Are the, what kind of problems they present? Do you notice certain ideas in them that perhaps because you've chosen a path, it might blind you to certain other possibilities that are open? Okay. So that's a little bit of the danger. And, you know, again, that's why I feel like there's like different, again, I think there's a real large subjective element in the whole, in this whole process of learning and how to approach a sugya. But that's, I think, that's what Rebbe said he does. I think basically, you know, Rav Feder and I, we've more or less adopted that method. I think, you know, different sugyas, I'm not sure, you know, and there's other external facts, you know, like, for example, if it's like on a Thursday, you know what I mean? Like, do you really want to read all the facts right beforehand, or you want to think, you know what I mean? Or the opposite, you know, so like there are certain, like, you have to be flexible and willing to do different things with different sugyas, but that's basically the first broad topic I wanted to discuss. Do you guys have any questions? Yeah, go ahead, Yaakov.
It sounds like the fact that you tend to be fixated in your working definition is another reason why you might want to be more globalist in terms of what facts you take.
Right. That would be an argument. The fact that you get fixed, their mind does get fixed in like the path they take, would argue for first, so before you really start on a path, first try to see everything. That way your path you do choose will be more informed by everything else. By all the facts you've seen, and it will help you in a certain sense be less biased when you read all the facts. Like, do you really want to bring your initial intuition to your interpretation of later facts, or gather all the facts and then develop an intuition based upon all those facts? You know, there's an advantage. You know, the problem is just it's an all knowledge works this way. Is that you can't. There's an interplay between observation and theory, and that your theory dictates your interpretation of your the observations, but your observations dictate your theory. So there's this interplay. So the question is, you know, is if you just read all the facts without any theory of what's going on, so yeah, it's just you don't understand the facts. It's just like they don't mean anything to you. It's just painful. You're reading a blot of Gemara and it's painful. You can barely understand what's going on. You understand what the issues. So that you don't assimilate, it doesn't become conceptually assimilated in your mind if you have no theory behind you. You know what I mean? Just like looking at data points. On the other hand, if you develop some sort of theory, so at least you can conceptually assimilate the facts, then you're bringing a certain bias, which might be a good bias if your theory is good, but it might be a bad bias if your theory is not good. You know, and if you don't have the mental flexibility to be able to interpret the facts in one theory and then be able to say, you know what, here's a different theory, and that could come to those facts again and with fresh eyes. Not everybody can do that so great. You know, that's like not everybody has that ability. So, you know, there's a give and take by this. It's a dynamic process of theory and facts, and there's advantages and disadvantages to both things. Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but it really sounds like as much as you are able, it is preferable to be more globalized. As long as you do have the ability to hold the facts together.
Oh, you mean what would be the advantage if you could do that? If your mind is
the
capable.
The only advantage otherwise is the facts are meaningless. You can't hold.
That's, you know, that is the way I feel. That is the way I feel. I mean, is there any intrinsic reason if your mind can do that? Your mind could really hold all the facts, see the different things, and then you think about it. Like, why wouldn't you do that?
Yeah.
Let me think a second. Okay, so I would say, based upon Zev's point here, we'll try to work the two together. Answer your question, Yaakov, and Zev's point. Is that there's two types of facts, okay? There's facts that you are ultimately going to see, like no matter what, okay? So you are going to read the end of the Gemara. It's just a question of when. It's a question of, you know, now, before you get this far, or after you get this far, later on today or tomorrow. You know what I mean? Like that, you're going to do. So then it's a question of Seder. What is the order in terms of reading the Gemara versus trying to think? That's one issue. Okay, but then there's the question of like, well, I could read the Rashba, I could read the Tosfos HaRash, I could read the Rambams, okay, so that's like, are you necessarily going to do that? So there are, like, for example, my father-in-law, he likes to see everything. I think he wants to like kind of see all the Gemaras, like all the different things, and then just slowly think about these things, you know? So there are people who do that, and they want to see like the whole broad sugya and everything like that.
What is broad?
I don't know. The truth is, I don't really know. I'm speaking to what somebody told me. I don't know. I don't know. It's a good question. I mean, I would think there are. I would think there are different. Again, there's different people who do different things. Some people like to see more, you know, broad range of Rishonim. See, for me, like I like to do most Tosfosim, but I wouldn't necessarily read every Tosfos. You know, even that, just like too much. It is too much. Also, I mean. So as I say, for sure, in terms of, I'm not advocating you have to see every fact in the entire sugya. Everything's connected. It's like saying you have to read through the entire. I remember when I was in Israel, there was this big machlokas, Kiyas or Bein. You know, that was the big machlokas. You know, and the argument was even the Bein guys or whatever it is, the one who's, you know, the rabbi, they're advocating for Bein, for Bekiyas rather. He's advocating for Bekiyas. So he was saying, everybody's saying Ian is the best thing. Ian's amazing. They weren't saying that Ian is not. You know, they're just saying that in order to do Ian, you have to first get all the facts, and therefore that's it. You have to finish the entire Shas Bekiyas, do all of Shas Bekiyas, and then once you finish Shas Bekiyas, then you do Ian. You know, so it's just the Seder Dvarim. It's just basically taking my point and just saying first get the facts, then give the Svaras. So saying what are the facts? The fact is Kol Tarkulo. So get the facts of Kol Tarkulo, and then do Ian. Okay, but yeah.
Isn't that what's actually in Pirkei Avos? It's not mentioned tomorrow.
For kids,
yeah,
that's true. Yeah, right. But I mean, for a kid, that makes sense because a kid's mind is very good when he's young. At I don't know what stage, 6, 7, 8, whatever it is, they're good at like assimilating facts, and they're not good at theory and svara. So it makes sense when a kid, when all their mind is good, they're like sponges, little sponges for facts and information, keeps them mishnayos. You know, and as their mind develops, they can think conceptually in a deeper way, then give them svara. Okay, but you're 20 years old now. You can do both. So if you basically, if we told you that first you got to finish all of Shas, the Kiyas, you know, and then you're gonna, then you start thinking, you're gonna be 40 years old by the time you're ready to give a svara. Nobody, you can't learn how to think. You can't learn, I don't know, maybe Rabbi Akiva could, but in general, if you don't haven't learned how to think Ian, like in a real conceptual manner, by the time you're, you know, 25, 30, whatever it is, it's very hard to learn how to learn on a deeper way, the Brisker Derech, on a conceptual analysis when you're 40 years old. You know, I mean, practically, I don't know anybody who's ever done that. Learn through all of Bekiyas, you know, and in the 20s and 30s, and then figure out how to learn Bein when they're 40. It just doesn't work. Okay, so that's why it's like, yes, there is in theory of value if you're going to be doing the facts anyway, and it's just a question of the order, and then if it's not going to impact your ability to you know, get confused, overwhelmed, so then you might as well see the whole sugya first, and then try to give svaras. Especially because, the other thing is, there is like you're a human being and you want learning to be enjoyable to you. So for some people, just like reading more and more facts, it has this element of like a torturous process of it's painful. You know, it's painful to read so much. What they enjoy is the thinking. So, you know, you have to also be honest with yourself. Like you want to make the process enjoyable for yourself. So even if like in theory this might be a better method to first get all the facts and then try to go as far as you find that that's causing you to not enjoy the learning and just like painful, you know, and then by the time you give up in the middle of the facts and you never go to the far, you know, you have to be honest with yourself in terms of you know, what make the process enjoyable. That's like a little bit of a different point, but you have to. But other than that, I would agree. I think if your mind could assimilate the facts without any real problems, and these are facts you're definitely going to do today, tomorrow, the next day, whatever it is, then I think it just makes sense to do it first, because there are definitely times where it's like frustrating where you basically spend time defining something and then when you read further you realize that was a mistake, That was just wrong. The whole thing was wrong. And you just wasted time basically defining something that had you just read further, you would have seen that was completely the wrong approach. So that's like, you know, besides for the fact that, you know, you're once you've given a svara, you've already biased yourself towards reading future facts, whatever. And sometimes just it becomes a waste of time. On the other hand, I don't want to minimize the problem of just reading too much. Just really sometimes overwhelms a person. You know, that really is a thing. And you know, I guess like there's some exceptional minds that doesn't affect somebody, but to a large degree, there is a limit. Everybody has their limit of what's too much for them. And it becomes painful. You don't want to make learning painful for you. Okay. And also, yeah, I'm definitely not talking about like all the different Rishonim and all the different viewpoints. Okay, that's also a different thing. There's a difference between seeing all the different ways of learning. That's what Zev was pointing out. Yeah. You start reading all the Rishonim, how Ramban learns the Sugya, how the Rambam learns the Sugya, and then how the Rush learns the Sugya, you know, all the different ways of learning a Sugya, that's different. That's like a totally different point. That for sure you should leave to later. Okay, that for sure you should leave to different viewpoints. You should definitely leave to later. You shouldn't try to work on all the different ways of learning the Sugya, because that there's no need for that. You know, the question I'm dealing with here is one way to learn the Sugya, Rashi's way. Presumably we start with Rashi. That's, you know, that's who we are. We start with Rashi or Tosos, whatever it is. And you want to have the basic way to learn the Sugya. You don't need to get all the three different ways to learn it. It's like, you know, for Pasuk and Mishle. You don't need to have all the three different ways to translate the Pasuk. You want to find one way and then understand it. I mean, they don't necessarily complement each other, the three or four different ways that you can learn a Sugya. It's once you have them that you want to contrast them and see the difference between them. But you really don't need to see, in the very beginning all the different ways. You know, that being said, there's a caveat for everything. Sometimes, like a machlokas rishonim can really bring out like a really fundamental part of the sugya, like where the core of the sugya is, like where the major machlokas rishonim is. So there is that caveat that sometimes it is helpful to know what the major pivot. The pivot point, just, you know, where the figure issues the figure revolves around.
Rabbi Zimmer.
Yes.
Hi. So you kind of touched on this, but I was hoping you'd be able to clarify. Sometimes like if you read like a Dibris Moshe or a Karen Ora or one of these guys that like asks the questions that you ask but have these very complicated and thorough answers, you realize that the intuitive answer is wrong, not because you had like a flawed thinking process, but simply because, you know, there's 40 other Gemaras that contradict it or one of those types of things. So granted that, you know, I don't have a brain like Rav Moshe Feinstein, but how could you ever say that there's a point where you could kind of give a svara with impunity, knowing that I don't know the other possible 45 Gemaras that are going to contradict this blatantly?
Right. Yeah, that's to some degree. That's exactly that thing. And that was the Mivasara rabbi. That was the guy saying that basically you can't try to give a svara until you basically do Shas Bekiyas. Once you know all the Gemaras, like Rav Moshe does, you know, once you know all the Gemaras, then you can basically do it. Look, the answer to that, I think, is like there's two or three different answers. We'll see if I remember them after I start talking. So one is just like the practicality, like I said before. It's just like for me to be able to know all those Gemaras, you basically, I'm going to have to learn Bekiyas for, I don't know, 10 years, 20 years. And I'm not going to. I don't enjoy Bekiyas that much. I'm going to learn Bekiyas for 6 months. Then I'm going to go do something else. Okay, and that basically, that's I'm never going to learn Gemara. So it's just not an Eitzah for a person, because practically who's going to, look, I mean, some people love Bekiyas, I guess, but some people don't. And for me, I just couldn't do Bekiyas my whole life. I get tired, my brain starts hurting. It just, it hurt, you know, it's painful for me. So it's just, there's a limit to how much I can learn without giving a svara. So it just doesn't work. It doesn't work on a practical level, you know? And again, also it's just, I think when you're young, your mind, as one thing, it's your mind changes as you get older, and your ability to really develop a derech halimud and a way to think, it's like it goes away. It's not always there. You shouldn't take the plasticity of your mind is definitely diminishes as you get older. It doesn't go away entirely, but you know, like there's a reason why all great physicists came up with their ideas before they were 30, or Chaim had his death before he was 30. Like you, there's like the creativeness of your mind, your ability to really, it's an interesting point. It's like that idea we said, like when you, before you really, when everything is like confusing, that's when you have the most ability to think creatively and to do different things. Like that's not just with the sugya, that's with your life. You know what I mean? The same thing. Like the person before they're 20, 30 years old. So really 30 is around the age. So then the world is confusing. There's all these different opinions, different philosophers, different approaches and different ideas out there. And that's when you have the ability to really choose for yourself in life. You have the most options available for you, where to go in life, what type of life to lead, what ideas to believe, what type of derech methodology to approach thinking for, just in everything. And that's why the most creative ideas, the new ideas are all really by people under 30, essentially, really breakthroughs. I mean, it's not that it's rare. It does happen for older people, but it's very rare that somebody, you know, in their 40s and 50s really comes up with a totally new creative breakthrough. It's not impossible, but it's rare. It's for that reason. It's for that reason because all possibilities are opened up to you. Once you get older and your mind and you start taking a particular approach of life, you've, in a sense, you've limited the possible approaches in life that you can go. It's not a bad thing. It's a good thing. There's a reason why your mind works that way. This enables you to really develop your mind and you don't always want to be working on large scale structures of like, you know, the different approaches to life, different philosophies. There's an idea of developing and perfecting the details and working through a particular method, a particular derech hachayim. So there's the reason why your mind does this. It has a lot of options available when you're younger. And then as you get older, you narrow down into a particular way of life. The same thing with the sugya. You know what I mean? Before you approach that sugya, when you first started, there's a lot of possibilities that open for you. But like, you don't want to just constantly be going between, you know, 3-4 different possible major ways of learning it. You want to, at some point, focus on a particular way and try to develop it and see how it works out and see the details and the nuances and the subtleties of ideas. You understand? So there's a value in developing a particular stream of thought, but there's also value of having all the possibilities open to you. Okay, so it's like an interesting that dynamic, that interplay exists in terms of a human being, you know, over the course of your life, but also in a particular sugya. It's a nice, interesting side point. Where was I? What was I up to? Oh, Ezra's thing, right? I would say two more things to Ezra. You're saying that. What am I saying? It's like practically doesn't work out. I think if I can remember. Two more points. The other thing is that we have Rishonim. You know what I mean? We have Rishonim. And in general, like the major Gemaras that contradict this Gemara, Tosfos will bring up. Or Rashi will incorporate, even if Rashi isn't always explicitly mentioned like Tosfos does, Rashi, when he's learning it, he's going to be taking into account that other sugya, and he's formulating his parish on this Gemara in order to reconcile that implicitly, at least with the other sugya. Not always. There is such a thing as like the Rashis themselves contradict or whatever. There is the phenomenon. If you knew more, definitely you'd be better off. In the ideal world, you would know all of Shas when you're trying to give a Svara. But to a large degree, that problem is minimized by Rishonim. Also, and I'm not meaning a separate thing, if you have the Masifta or an art scroll or the Karen Ora, Pnei Yeshua, if you have Achronim, okay, and it's as a either the Achronim themselves, just then you're really getting into a world of, you know, reading pages of Achronim, or a summary of Achronim, so that also diminishes that. I'm not advocating that specifically, you know, we're trying to learn the Brisker Derech, and to some degree, getting caught up in Achronim is counterproductive there. Achronim have their role, but in when you first try to learn the Brisker Derech, it's not super helpful. But if you have like shortcuts to these things, like, you know, summaries, secondary sources, that can further mitigate it. But on a basic level, most of the problem is taken care of by Rishonim. You know, major problems are generally dealt with by the Rishonim, other sugyas. So you don't really have to know all of Shas. You just have to know how to look up, a Rashba on the Gemara, you know? So, but again, that's a question. When do you look up the Rashba? That's what we're discussing now. But like ultimately, if you want to, you know, and the third thing, because that's the second thing, the Rishonim to some degree mitigate it. And the third thing is like, I don't want to minimize the idea that we're trying to get to the Amita Satora, we're trying to understand what the Sugya is saying. But like, but like, this is not like, you know, if you get, if you miss a Gemara, which contradicts it, you know what I mean? You give a, I gave a Shia and has a Shia Nikra. I thought I had seen all the things. Turns out there's another Gemara I didn't see in Bava Kamma. I saw it years later. You know, my question is now, do I take down the Shia or not? You know? What?
Is that the physics
view? Yeah, yeah, it was the metalachic field theory. What's it? Metalachic field theory. I think I saw a Gemara recently in the past couple of months but that brings it in with Matbea. And I don't think it's, you know, but like, but I'll tell you, in that case, I basically had the Masifta. I did the whole Shia, I did the whole Sugya. I saw the Rishonim. I had the Masifta piece on it, and they brought in all their cases. They didn't bring in this one case in Bava Kamma where I didn't see it there. That what they might. I had them in that chair. Oh, maybe I worked it out. Maybe. Okay, so I don't know. But it doesn't preclude it. But so what? You know, that my point is, ultimately, Ezra, you got to be able to live with an imperfect world. And it's true, that can exist. And it could be that you're giving a svar that's not really true because there's some fact that out there contradicts you, you know. But if you study 1,000 swans and they're all white, okay, you're legit. You can legitimately say all swans are white. Is it possible you'll find, if you looked at more swans, you'll find a black swan? Yes, it's true. And there are times where your theory is wrong. That's why you have to have the flexibility of, if you see a Gemara later on, you know, you have to be able to reject something just because you said it, you know? So it's, even though like in an ideal world, you would really see everything. It's just that, you know, it's, for practical purposes, you'll go much further if you're willing to tolerate the fact that you're going to make mistakes because you haven't seen everything. But in the end of the day, you'll go further and you'll think better and you'll have deeper ideas if you can tolerate error. To some degree, when you try to remove all error, you slow yourself down. You know, it's like the difference between like an engineer and like a mathematician, or, you know, it's like an engineer is trying to solve a practical problem. And it's to some degree where we're trying to, even though it's a conceptual analysis Gemara, we're trying to work through Shas, get through the Gemara, but in a conceptual way, really understanding it. So you have to be willing to tolerate error. And there's a certain number of errors that are not going to undermine your overall approach to the whole, you know, sugya. We're doing Hachovel now. Are we going to get every sugya right? No, we're going to be making mistakes in certain sugyas. But like overall, we'll get a good idea of what is going on in the area of Hachovel itself. But if you try to really eliminate all errors, you know, that requires such an amount of investment of time of reading all the Achronim on every sugya, it'll slow you down to the point you're not going to finish the parak. So, you know, there is a trade-off, you know, because time is finite. And like I said before also, like there's a certain amount of tzar a person can take. You have to be, you know, if you're willing to compromise on the ideal world. Okay, so Yaakov is just asking if there's any remedies to the problem of when you have that working svara, if it makes you a little bit less inflexible. So I guess what I was implicitly trying to say there, that there's really two components to that, two components to the problem. One is the emotional problem, and the other is an intellectual problem, in a certain sense, that derives from the intellectual process itself. Let me start with the second one. So that's kind of what I was trying to say, is that to some degree your mind works that way. That your mind uses theory to understand facts. And that's almost why you're doing, that's why you're giving a svara before you read all the facts, because you want to have the advantage of having some working theory when you assimilate the facts. So you can't now say, well, I don't want to be biased by it. Well, that's almost what you're doing. I think as you, you know, train better and whatever it is, you know, and as you learn more, you'll be better able to rework your interpretation of facts as you change your svara. So, but that's not, I don't think that's necessarily a problem in the sense, it's just almost the very thing that you're going for has a using a theory in order to help you interpret the new observations, that's going to bias you by that theory, which is why you're using it, because you want that bias as opposed to just being confused, you know? And I think as you become a more mature thinker, you'll be more able to reverse that process, okay? It won't be permanent, you know? But I don't think there's any solution to that side of the equation other than just, you know, becoming a more mature thinker. I think. The other side of it is the emotions. Is like once you give a svara, two things. Either once you give a svara, then this is just a general problem. It becomes your svara. Once it's your svara, then you just have an emotional commitment to your svara, and you don't want to give it up so easily. You know, so that's, you know, that's, I think, the general problem that can be worked on in many areas of life, of just, you know, ego, of gaiva, you know, and I think enough, a person's is more, the greater your learning is pursuit of the truth and pursuit of ideas, and the less of it is about your own ego and yourself, the more flexible you'll be about giving up your own svara. But that's like a broad, you know, but that's, you know, that's a broad, how do you work on that? That's for luck, you know, that's life. Life is essentially working on giving up on gaiva and pursuing truth, you know? So I would say general perfection as a whole will spill over into learning, like, which is, in, you know, this is one good example of why a person who has gaiva, it ultimately impedes his ability to learn. You know, this is just another example. There's a lot of other areas. You can't learn from somebody else. You get into fights with the chavrusas. I don't know, a lot of other different things, but this is another one. You become too attached to your own ideas. You're not willing to hear your Rebbe's idea. You're not willing to hear chavrusa's idea, and you're not willing to hear another of your own ideas. That's like a funny problem. It's like you become too attached to your own idea. You're not willing to say the Gemara is correcting you. It's like the Gemara is correcting you. You know, like reality is telling you were wrong initially. So, why is Gaiva stupid? I don't know. Gaiva just, you know, it's like you don't want to correct yourself because then you were wrong. But even though you're correcting yourself, so it's just like another way that Gaiva will get you. But, you know, I don't think there's a way to work on Gaiva in this regards. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just this particular thing. It's more of an overall broad personality issue of you know, how you work on Gaiva. And that's like a much bigger topic. You know? Okay. Let me move on to the second thing I want to speak about. Both of these things came up because of the sigil we're about to start on, right? Peidalad Manalaf here. The first one, obviously, because the sugi is about a blot. There's, I don't know, about 10 steps or so. And I thought it was important in this case to read the whole Gemara, just to get an overview of where the Gemara is going, what are the key issues, as opposed to trying to define it, you know, all at once. Okay. The second reason why I wanted to approach this sugi this way is because of the ideas of Havaminas, okay, defining Havaminas. So I think it's like an important part of the Brisker Derech is, and it's not just the Brisker Derech, it's really Gemara's, the whole Talmudic method, is the idea of a Havimina Maskana. Okay, the initial approach of a Gemara and then how the Gemara is, rejects it, conclusions, or, you know, the back and forth of a Gemara. Okay, so, and specifically in terms of the Brisker Derech, because we very often give us far for the Havimina, so what's the Machlokas in the Havimina Maskana? What are the two approaches? And in a certain sense, it can appear that we treat a Havimina Maskana essentially the same as we treat a Machlokas Abaye and Rava. You know, we have a Abaye and Rava, and you want to give a Svar for Abaye and a Svar for Rava. And what's really the difference between that? And we have a Havimina Maskana, you want to give a Svar for the Havimina, a Svar for the Maskana. What's the difference? In terms of Brisker Derech, it might almost feel like you're doing the same thing. Okay? And sometimes, sometimes there's no real difference between a machlokas, like two, as far to define a machlokas, the difference between two positions, Abaye and Rava, and as far as it defines the difference between the Havamina and the Maskana. There's no real difference, okay? Because there's different types of Havaminas, okay? So one I'm calling a genuine Havamina, where the Gemara presents a legitimate conceptual possibility. Like a full way of looking at something, a theory in its own right. And the Gemara basically attacks and shows that that's not the right theory. You know? It was a Havamina, but ultimately it gets rejected because it's not in line with a Braisa, it's not in line with the Mishnah, you know, something along those lines, or some sort of Yifta. Okay, that's like one type of Havamina Skana. In those kinds, you really do want to define the Havamina, because that's like a big part of the whole sugya, is appreciating like this other framework. Like, how could it, what was the alternative framework of how it being understood? And it's like a legitimate framework in its own right. It's just not the way we ended up holding. Okay, but that's, and those are like important Havimin Maskanas. Okay, I shouldn't say important. But those are one type. And that's like the full genuine Havimin Maskana, where almost there's no real difference between a Havimin and Maskana, except that happens to be one's the conclusion, one's just the in the beginning. Could have easily been a Abaye and Rava. You know, we passed like Rava, but Abaye is still a theory, right? Okay. Sometimes, and this is, I think, what happens is happening in our Gemara. I know we haven't done it together yet. We'll take it up tomorrow. But like sometimes the Gemara presents a series of Havamina Maskanas, things like that, simply as a stylistic method of trying to convey to you the issues in the Sugya. Okay? Like, what are the key issues in the Sugya? Like, for example, it says, the Gemara says, maybe you'll say, right, it was, I don't know, Shor B'Shor Adam B'Shor, whatever it was. It's because it says, Elohim Be'inan, you need Smuchim. So yeah, but Smuchim is throughout the entire Parsha. All four things, all cases require Elohim, not just Adam and Adam B'Shor, but also Shor B'Shor and Shor B'Adam. I definitely confused them, but whatever, right? Not just all, right? They're all, Ki Yigach and Ashikas too. You see the whole Parsha is Elohim, or they're all in the Parsha Mishpatim. They all require Smuchim, Dayanim Smuchim, right? So now, I think it'd be a mistake. So you say, well, what was the Havamina? The Havamina was only those two cases, not all four cases. And you try to give a svar. What was the Havamina such that Elohim only applies to those two and not to all four? And I'm not saying Achrona might not do this type of thing, okay? But I don't think that's really what's going on in the Gemara. But the point of the Gemara there is the Gemara is introducing, it's a method, it's a stylistic method of the Gemara is introducing you that one of the core concepts in the Sugya is the idea of Elohim, that you need Dayanim Smuchim. That's the factor, right? Rava had the statement that we don't have, we're not done Adam B'Shor, whatever, in Bavel. We're not starting, right? Anything that's where you evaluate the person like in Eva, we don't done in Bavel. And like, why not? We're wants to figure out why not. Now, one of the key issues is, right, Gemara concludes, that's through Shchicha and Knas, but if it just gave you the conclusion that you only do things there, Shchicha and Knas, you wouldn't realize where that comes from. The Gemara is trying to introduce you to the core concepts and elements that help you arrive at the conclusion. Even though that step alone of Elohim Be'inan is not going to be help you solve the problem directly, because Elohim, the Gemara presents it as like Elohim solves it because it applies to these two. Yeah, but it applies to all four. Right? The Gemara has another step or two it does like that, where it's like there's no real having that this would solve the problem. But the Gemara is introducing it in that manner because it wants to show you this is a core concept in which the ultimate answer will make use of this idea. It doesn't solve it in its own right, but it's an important idea that you have to be aware of. If you don't understand that idea, that there's this basic requirement of Elohim in the Sugya, you're not gonna get the conclusions make any sense. So I think in those areas, you don't want to get bogged down spending time trying to define every Havamina and every Maskana. The goal is to try to understand Shas, understand Torah, and to be able to see, the longer you spend on defining this Havamina Maskana, the less time you're going to have to define juicier things, So you have to be judicious about what you devote your time to, what you spend your time to. You want to spend your time on that which is most fruitful, where you'll get the most out of. So you, by Havamina, you have to be willing to, develop a, one of the skills of learning is to developing the intuition of what is a stylistic Havamina the Gemara is introducing, but it doesn't really mean it in a serious sense as a full worked out theory, where it's just like, that's just the way the Gemara talks through Havamina Maskanas. And when the Gemara is actually presenting a legitimate theory, that it demands that you really analyze and understand what it's talking about. Okay. Yeah, there's also the point that not every Havamina has to work out with every other Gemara. Right? There's sometimes the Gemara presents a Havamina and it's rejected for reason X. That's the Gemara rejects. It says, no, that's not true because of this. We say, well, what was that Havamina? How would it work out this problem? How would it work out this problem? I mean, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes the Gemara, and very often Tosis will say this, is that, look, the Havamina really didn't work for other reasons. Also, the Gemara just picked on one of them. Sometimes the Havamina is just has like multiple holes in it, multiple problems. And Gemara just takes the most basic one. Yeah, go ahead, Zev.
Work out the Havamina with other Gemara.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, like, sometimes. Yes, that's what I'm saying. It's not all javelinas are created equal. That's kind of the point I'm trying to make. Is that, yes, sometimes, like I was saying, in the brisket there, javelinas play an important role. And yeah, you will see, like, the Rav or Chaim, that they'll take a javelina seriously, and they'll open up a key element from the javelina itself. You'll be able to see ideas. And that's why we will spend time on javelinas. We'll spend time trying to find them. You know, and sometimes they're even more interesting than maskanas. They can be very important, very interesting. But I just wanted, like, you have to be aware that they're not all javelinas are created equal. That's the point. And as I say, sometimes javelinas are just simply are riddled with holes. I think Mark picked one problem, but it could have picked more. You know, sometimes it has one other problem, and it has six other problems. It's not limited. You know, there's a Tosfos in which point out many problems, and Mark said, whatever, it just took one of them. You know? Like, you know, for example, the Gemara we just saw before. And what was his javelina that it was you be chayv dal dvarim by a person? You know, like, it wasn't a javelina. It was just some sort of either miscommunication. Like, there are things like that. You know, you can't get too caught up. You can't get too caught up in trying to define every javelina conceptually. You know, so that's the other thing, is just the general, I would say, universal point between the two major ideas that over here is that you want to learn, you want to learn how to learn, and you want to learn as much as you can in terms of seeing different ideas, seeing different sugyas, things like that. And you have a limited amount of time. Time is an important resource. So you have to allocate it properly. You have to use chachma in terms of, that's all the point of the methodology of Brisker Derech is not just a methodology of Hefze Gavras and Havin Maskanas, but there's an idea of chachma in applying the methodology itself. You have to be intelligent about how you do these things. And a big part of it is knowing how to allocate your time, when to think about what type of problem, how much time to spend on something. Maybe I forgot to mention this point earlier. But when you are thinking about it, if you have an intuition or something like that, and you try to think about it, especially if you haven't really seen the whole Gemara, especially. But, you know, you don't want to spend 2 hours thinking about a question. You know, to some degree, it's implicit in Rebbe's answer. You know, the people who tend to the idea of they want to really define it right away with that, and then read the Gemara. And there are people like that, you know. So even if you want to do that, the point is, don't spend hours defining something if you haven't seen all the facts. You know what I mean? Like, you have no intuition. That's kind of what I'd be saying. If you don't have an intuition, you're just going to sit there all day thinking, you have no intuition. In a sense, your mind has a natural intuition, and your thinking and svara is taking that natural intuition and defining it and refining it. But, like, you have to almost start off with a natural intuition. I shouldn't say have to, but you would like to. It's very helpful. Very, very helpful if you have some sort of natural intuition of how the machlokas having maskana, the machlokas, what the key issues are, and then you can sit down and bring your mind to work to try to work it out and define it, things like that. But if you don't have that initial intuition, it's very, very difficult to just sit there, and you can sit there and you blank out and you can come up with nothing. Like, when that happens, then move on. Either move on, get more facts, and, you know, and or at some point, you know, move on from the sugya. If you just have no insight into the sugya, there's nothing, you know, so then the sugya is not for you. The thing is, a sugya that's too hard for you. You know, you don't want to spend all your time on a sugya that's too difficult. What's the point? What are you not going to get anything? You'll come back to it in 20 years and you'll have a better basis of knowledge. Maybe there's a key idea you're missing. Maybe you're just not ready for that kind of an idea yet. So, you know, you have to be willing to move on from something if you see you're not making any progress. On the other hand, you don't want to be a kind of person, every time you just have a hit of a speed bump, you just give up and you move on. That's not good either. You have to, you know, there is a balance between being able to work through resistances and problems and sit there and think about something. And in general, I would say you should, I don't know, I'm not sure. Both are problems. You have to be able to push yourself to sometimes work and sit and think about a problem. But on the other hand, you really have to be, you can't become, go to that extreme where you just, you know, you just sit and you will keep in thinking about it over and over and over if you see you don't have any opening. You know, you have to be able to see, do I have an opening here? Am I capable of really seeing some sort of answer, or is this just beyond me at this point? And then just, what am I doing here? And then move on. So there, again, that's another point of just, you know, allocating your time, you know, a little bit of a different point than before, but. an important point. Implicit in Rebbe's thing is that wait till you have an intuition before you start sitting and thinking. Okay. No, I don't want to be so extreme where it sounds like I'm saying either if you don't have the intuition right away, then that's it, then move on, you're not going to get it. No, sometimes you just have to think. You have to think for a few minutes. You think for a few minutes, then you start getting an intuition. It doesn't have to be hits you right away. Sometimes you have to, you know, intuition is this vague term. I hope you understand a little bit what. Yeah, sometimes you have to sit and think about the machlokas for 5 minutes before you get, develop an intuition about what it is. You know what I mean? It doesn't have to be immediate. But I'm more trying to describe the sense of like, you're staring at the problem and you just don't know what they're arguing about. You just don't know where to go. You have no idea. You know what I mean? Like that's like, you just have no clue. It's just, you cannot, you know, say that's more what I'm discussing. And then what happens is you start speculating. You start coming up with, well, let's say this were the Nachmachlokas. If this guy was saying this guy was saying this, what would that work out? Like you start working backwards. This is a very different methodology. You know what I mean about speculating and good svaras, which we'll get to over the course of the year, you know. But basically, and I don't have enough time to develop this at all now. But sometimes you, when you follow poor methodology, you try to, basically it comes at it, if you're trying to analyze something that's really is beyond you, then the only way to do it is really to speculate. You're gonna have to use poor methodology in order to give a svara. And like, that's not something you want to really do. It's just, you can end up giving, the only svara you can give is a bad svara, basically, where it's not really grounded in the thing itself. You know, so you're gonna have to kind of bring in some sort of universal question, some sort of major, you know, big hakira, you know, is mezuzah halacha in the gavra, is halacha in the bias? I don't know, something like that. And then you say, oh, that's as far here. It's like, that's all you can really do, is just come up with these broad sweeping major questions that you could have come to before you even saw the sugya to begin with. You know, like there's just no way to, if you don't have that opening, you can't really give a good svara. But yeah, I don't want to make it seem that either the opening hits you right away or not. Sometimes it requires, you know, a few minutes of thinking into the thing. But usually when you sit there and think about it, even for a few minutes, you can get the sense, is this something where my mind kind of sees that there are these two possibilities a little bit. Maybe you have a question on one side that bothers you. That's even that alone is something that can guide you. You know what I mean? Like I kind of see two possibilities and once that really makes sense to me, the other one has this problem. What about this issue? How does it work through this problem? You know, so that already is something because then you can focus on a problem. You know, intuition is, it could be intuition of the two sides, but it could also sometimes be like, if you can identify the problem with one side, that's also an opening. I really shouldn't have said intuition. I should say an opening. There's like an opening into the sugya. Sometimes it's the intuition of the machlokas, but sometimes it's a particular problem that allows you to focus your mind on the machlokas, on the havamin, whatever it is. If you have an opening, different types of openings, you know, but if you have an opening where you can work and there's something to apply your mind to, that's then it's worth devoting your energy. But it's not worth devoting your energy to finding the opening. If you, you know, spend a little time, but don't spend hours if you have no opening looking for an opening. Maybe the opening's not there for you. And once you have that opening, spend the time making it bigger and getting into the sugya. But like, if you don't have the opening, well, read more facts. Maybe you need more facts. If that doesn't help you, and you know, you okay, so this is not sugya, is not for you. There's plenty of other sugyas in Shas. You know. That's it.